Well, the View My Seats podcast for Wednesday, September 3rd. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today from golfnewsnet.com, Ryan Belangi. Okay, Ryan, how upset were you that Captain Tom Watson didn't take you with one of his three Ryder Cup picks?
Well, I can at least shank the ball as well as Webb Simpson can, so I at least wanted some consideration. But I guess I didn't deserve it. I didn't win on the PGA Tour this year. Then again, I guess two wins on the PGA Tour this year didn't do it either because Chris Kirk didn't get a pick. So I'm not really sure what Tom Watson was going for when picking Webb Simpson, but I do at least like the picks of Keegan Bradley, especially and modest like the pick of Hunter Mahan. So I think it'll work. I don't feel very confident the Americans are going to win, but I at least kind of like the picks.
You know that. A lot of people are talking since both teams have made their picks. A lot of people are talking about what a contrast in styles it was, as far as how the picks were made. On the one hand, you have European team captain Paul McGinley, who made his picks in somewhat an understated fashion. And then you have Tom Watson, the American team captain, who went through a lot more pomp and circumstance and people have kind of pointed to the way those two captains made their three picks as kind of indicative of their leadership styles and just the approach of the two teams. Do you look at those announcements as kind of a microcosm of the team philosophy moving forward? Do you think there's any sort of harbinger of things to come there?
I don't think that's necessarily a reflection of the team. I think it's a reflection of the individual bodies. I think the European Tour is kind of understated. They want to make this a big deal because it is their biggest cash cow and they only get it every couple of years. Unlike, you know, where the Americans play for themselves, at least as a country every year, this organizing body only gets it every two. But I think that they do it in a very European way. They're rather understated about it versus the PGA of America, which is led by Pete Bevacqua, who is a business guy, he's a marketing guy. As a CEO, and you have Ted Bishop, who is not afraid to stick his neck out for publicity. I think those guys wanted to kind of go over the top, make it seem like a bigger deal than maybe it really is, and really draw this thing out because there, as you know, John, was an hour pregame on Golf Channel for what amounts to reading three names off of a piece of paper. And that's pretty ridiculous. I don't think that reflects Tom Watson, though, because I think Tom Watson is a no-nonsense kind of guy who just wants to win. He doesn't want to do it in a glitzy fashion. And he's not a flashy player himself. He's just a flashy dresser. So I don't think it's a reflection of the American side that they went and drew this thing out as long as humanly possible. I think Watson will be very direct with his guys. He wants to accomplish one thing, and he wants to win the Ryder Cup a second time as captain and break the European stranglehold on the Ryder Cup. And he will do that with whatever 12 guys they give him. So I don't feel like that's going to tell us that we're going to have a flashy American team, but I would like to see some flair. I think there's got to be some kind of personality to this team. I really like the personality the 2012 team had. And so I hope it kind of reflects that somewhat.
The whole production as far as the pregame picks show and the actual picks themselves on the American side was dripping with irony, I thought, because on the one hand you have this kind of lavish to-do about these three captains' picks, and then when the picks were made, I don't think the names surprised any of us as far as Bradley, Mahan, and Simpson. Maybe Simpson surprised some people, but you're talking about three guys who, at least from my perspective, really, really fail to move the needle towards the American side. And I think the Americans are stuck with this simple problem. As you look up and down that roster, there really is no single alpha dog on the team this year. I was trying to figure who would be the guy that everyone on the team rallies around, kind of like call it like a Poulter or a McIlroy on the European side. Really, you can name anyone on the European side as kind of that lead alpha dog. And you look up and down the American roster and you don't really see that name this year. So in your mind, is there is there one guy on the American side that is the combination of both form, experience, passion that really is going to be the person that other players, the team, rally around?
I don't know that they do. I mean, I think that there's someone maybe to rally around, and you can look at the elder statesman. You could look to Phil Mickelson, who has been beaten down in the Ryder Cup for basically his entire career. You could look toward Matt Kuchar, who is a great locker room guy, obviously is the friendliest guy you'll ever meet probably on the PGA Tour. Or maybe you can rally around Tom Watson, because he was given this job for a reason by the PGA of America, because they believe he can help them, the PGA of America, the United States of America, wherever you want to term it, get back the Ryder Cup on foreign soil, because he's the last guy that did it. And whether that logic's flawed or not, it may turn into a rallying cry to win one for Tom. I don't know if it will or not, but they're going to have to find somebody. I think you're right, they're going to have to find somebody to rally around, or otherwise they could find themselves getting trapped.
Yeah, I don't really know how much of team golf like the Ryder Cup comes down to having an intimidation factor. I think the event itself is intimidating enough to most players. And I don't know how much you need some sort of rabble-rouser on a team to try to incite the best out of teammates and the worst out of opponents. But it just strikes me as if the Europeans, they don't just have an abundance of experience and top-notch talent. They also have guys who can will themselves to victory. And you just look up and down the United States team, and it's not the type of team, at least from my perspective, it's not the type of team that really instills any kind of fear in the opponent. And I wonder how much of a golfer's mindset or mentality in an event like the Ryder Cup can be altered because they are intimidated by an opposing player. And if so, I just don't see where that's coming from on the United States side.
I don't know that there is an intimidating player on the U.S. I mean, if you look at it from the European perspective, they have won all but one of the last five, right? They won 04 and 06 in record fashion by the same score. They lost in 08. They won in 10 and 12 in very tight fashion. So they know how to win big. They know how to win close. They know how to win home. They know how to win away. They've beaten all the Americans that are veterans pretty handily. That's why their Ryder Cup records look terrible. And the guys that are inexperienced, they're going to find themselves in a road game situation as rookies. That's probably going to be pretty unsettling, because it's not typically a partisan crowd that you deal with in golf, and you don't really know what it's like to deal with that until you're in front of it. So if I'm the Europeans, at least psychologically, I have a huge advantage, because I have all the confidence in the world that I can take the Americans no matter what they throw at us or what we throw at them. And so the Americans have to come up with something to believe in. What that is, I don't know. But the Europeans can pretty easily just walk into this and as a clear favorite, and there should be no reason why they shouldn't win.
There's definitely something to be said about being the visiting team, being the visitors, being the side that no one expects to win. And the United States is in the position now where they're away from their home turf, familiar territory. They'll be in Scotland, far, far away from a lot of the pressures of home and a lot of fans, and no one really does expect them to win this year. And so they certainly have this underdog mentality heading into the Ryder Cup. And that lack of pressure could produce a really loose group when it comes to the 3 days in Scotland. And so if there is an advantage to being the visitors, to being the road team, the United States very well could play that card.
I think you're right. I think that you have to feel like you've got to be pretty loose if you're the American. You're not expected to win. Your team looked epically bad in terms of who was going to make it in July. It looked a little bit better in August, and now it looks kind of so-so in September. You have nothing to lose. The guy that's your captain, I mean, is a legend, so the attention kind of falls more on him than you. There's no, in that sense, that's good for the American. And I think they did benefit a little bit from the captain's picks, maybe in terms of the confidence level, because the guy that got left off, Luke Donald, is 10-4-1 in his Ryder Cup career. That guy didn't make the cut. Stephen Gallagher did. So in that regard, Paul McGinley did the Americans a favor by going, this guy has gotten points in 11 of 15 matches in his Ryder Cup career. This guy's played zero. So you get a little bit from that. You get a little bit that Westwood isn't playing all that great, and also is tied for the record number of Ryder Cup losses for European players. He's a captain's pick. So if anything, if you can draw anything from the final makeup of the 12, there is some confidence to be drawn from that, because they could have picked other murderer's row players, and they didn't. So maybe that's an advantage that the Americans can kind of quietly put in their cap.
One of the things that I find interesting with these captain's picks, and we're talking to Ryan Belange of the GolfNewsNet.com, is that when you look at these Ryder Cup captain's picks, Tom Watson clearly went with a little experience, but he also, I think, had chemistry in mind. And Webb Simpson's pick, at least in my mind, raises a few questions as far as how compatible are these players on the United States Ryder Cup roster. In particular, Bubba Watson has, as you alluded to earlier in the podcast, he's a tumultuous player, I think, to put it lightly. He is prone to ups and downs. He's prone to outbursts and inbursts and any kind of bursts. And there aren't many guys who really feed positively off of his negative energy. And one of the guys that has paired with him in the past in Ryder Cups and doesn't seem to mind playing with him is Webb Simpson. So I wonder how much of Tom Watson's decision to pick Webb Simpson was based on the fact that he needs Bubba to be at his best in order to have any shot of beating the Europeans. And Webb Simpson might be one of the few players who could bring out Bubba's best over at Glen Eagles. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, Bubba, I think that's why Webb Simpson is on the team, to be honest with you. Exclusively to deal with Bubba Watson. Because they paired together well. They did well in the two matches they played together. And Webb hasn't really had the best of seasons on the PGA Tour. So you got to think a little bit next level and think, well, Bubba's in a terrible mood. He's been in a terrible mood for what seems like 2 or 3 months now. He doesn't seem all that interested in golf. He doesn't seem all that interested in being an ambassador for golf as a major reigning major champion. So maybe sticking Webb Simpson on Bubba detail for 3 days will get him out of this funk and at least get him to play some competitive golf and not get him to whine every time some Scottish person yells haggis at him. And if that works out, then it was worth the pick. If you get a point or two out of Bubba Watson, it was worth the pick. So I think that's the gamble Tom Watson's willing to make, is maybe you throw Webb Simpson out as a sacrifice point on single Sunday if he doesn't play well, but maybe they inspire each other, Webb and Bubba, to get a couple points in the team portion.
Yeah, chemistry is – I don't know if chemistry is an overrated or underrated thing when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Certainly when it comes to most team sports, chemistry is a real thing. I know a lot of people like to say that chemistry doesn't matter. You know, there's that famous saying about the Yankees, how they, you know, it doesn't matter how well they played together or on the field. They all left in, you know, separate cabs after the game. So chemistry really is overrated. I mean, we've been on teams before when we were younger, and I think chemistry is definitely a real thing when it comes to team sports. And when you look up and down the United States roster, you don't just have rookies, but you have a lot of combustible personalities, not just Bubba, but then there's a guy like, you know, Patrick Reed, and no one really knows what they're going to get out of a guy like Patrick Reed. And there's been some talk about how a lot of players on tour were kind of, Patrick Reed's ruffled a few of them the wrong way, the way he talked about being a top five player, and how he might be someone who other Americans have a difficult time playing with during this Ryder Cup. But the trick there is that if you look at the roster, Patrick Reed is one of those players that that could be that fiery competitor that really does bring the best of the United States side. He could be the kind of the somebody who really does bring out that patriotic fervor and helps inspire others to play their best. Even though heading into the tournament, I don't know how many Americans on the team really looking forward to playing with Patrick Reed.
Yeah, I really don't know who you're going to put Patrick Reed with. I mean, maybe sticking with Jimmy Walker. I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's got a big following in terms of he's got a lot of guys that are his friends. So maybe he just rides the bench a bunch for the first 2 days and plays one or two matches in the team portion and kind of gets the three-match minimum, and that's it. Or maybe he gets thrown out in the first session and Watson goes, look, if you win, you keep playing. If you don't win, you're done until Sunday. Go. I mean, that's how I would motivate Patrick Reed, is say, you keep playing until you lose. Kind of winners, kind of like, you know, strips and skins on the basketball court. Winners keep the ball. So that's how I would try to motivate Patrick Reed. And if that works, it doesn't matter if anybody else likes him. So long as he, whoever gets partnered with, can continue to earn points, they stay out there. I'd be all for that. I think that's the only way you're going to maximize what you can out of Patrick Reed.
I'm still holding out hope that Tom Watson tells Steve Stricker to suit him up and play.
With a bad hip, I'm not seeing that happening. But I would honestly trust Steve Stricker over probably at least three guys on this team, and that's with the bad hip.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you actually made a joke about Steve Stricker is obviously not going to be playing, but he is one of Tom Watson's assistant captains. And you made a joke earlier on Twitter about how the European team has just named a few more assistant captains, vice captains to represent Team Europe. And it's getting to the point where if you're a senior tour player in Europe, you're starting to feel a little bad for yourself if you're not named a vice captain.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, it almost seems like there needs to be a points list to be a European vice captain. It seems like the list gets larger and larger every year. I don't understand why there have to be so many, other than that there are so many different countries in Europe, that they feel like they've got to have all their bases covered. That's the only thing I can think of. But even if you think about the vice captains, they're all from countries that are pretty well represented on the 12 that are on the team or the captain himself. So I'm not entirely getting that either. But you know what? Fine. If have 20 vice captains. Who cares? Have more vice captains than players. But I think at the end of it all, it's not so much important for the logistics of it, but so much maybe for chemistry. I mean, it's another five guys that you can draw on that have great experience in the Ryder Cup, very victorious experience, even putting aside the guys that are already on the team that are kicking butt. So in that sense, having no cap on how many vice captains there are, might as well take advantage of it. There's no reason not to. Now, I think in that regard, the Europeans are a little bit smarter about it than the Americans, but I think there should be a cap. I think you should only be able to pick three. You shouldn't be able to pick four, five, ten, whatever. There should be a limit.
Well, pretty soon the Europeans are going to run out of golf carts. These guys are going to have to start walking the course.
Yeah, or that. Or say, you know, you can only have three carts, and the other two guys got to figure out a way to walk around the course. I think that would be pretty funny, because then I'm pretty sure there'd be a hilarious game of rock, paper, scissors to figure out the schmuck that has to walk the golf course.
Then you'll start to see some attrition with the vice captains. I was thinking, you know, as exciting as the captain's picks are and how the drama unfolded the other day, it would be kind of fun if the process for picking the Ryder Cup team was altered slightly. I don't think the system's broken, because it obviously works and you do typically get the best players. But I was thinking that if the Ryder Cup and golf really wanted to increase interest even more in this event, that they could do a few things with their final pick. So you keep the roster at 12, but instead of having three captains' picks, you only have two captains' picks. And the final spot on the team, you go one of two ways with that final spot. You ready to hear my two ideas?
All right.
I can tell you're excited. All right. The first idea is you open it up to the fans. You allow the fans to vote for, let's say, a 24-hour window where fans get to vote online, and they get to vote for the player that they want to fill out the roster for both teams. That's the first way to alter the roster, to make the last pick, is that you have the opposing team choose the final player for the other team.
And that's really interesting. I think you'd have to put
You like this. You're buying the second idea, not the first.
I'm buying both. I like both ideas because I think the notion of getting the fans involved is a good thing for a competition like this because it, at the end of the day, it is an exhibition. So however you can do it in a compelling way, I'm all for it. I do like the second idea more than the first, although you'd have to put some parameters around who can get picked. If you're going to let the opposing fans pick the worst player, the guy who can get Vandevelded from 99, where you don't even see him until the singles matches, then I think you have to kind of limit it to, okay, you can only pick someone who's better than 25th in the standings, in the point standings.
You make it like the top 50 players or top 100 players in the world. So you can't pick some guy who's back and forth from the web.com tour.
Yeah, so you couldn't pick like Andres Gonzalez and go, deal with that. But I do like the idea that you could influence one way or the other plays because it is an exhibition. It's for fans. I know it matters to each side, but it is for the fans. They should have a little bit of say in who represents them.
I think it'd be great, and I'm excited just thinking about it. And you think about all the possible awkwardness that could unfold on the course. I tune in just to see how that plays out. I mean, as far as what if you went the way where the opposing team got to pick that last player? Just imagine how awkward that would be for those 3 days for that player, knowing that he's playing against guys who think that he represents the best chance they have at winning. I find that the possibilities there as far as drama and intrigue for fans is endless. And again, we're talking about a system that's not broken, but in a perfect world, in a world that caters to the fans and perhaps is interested in getting other types of fans interested. You're right, it is an exhibition. I know it's treated with a bit more reverence than just an exhibition like an all-star game, like an NBA all-star game where the fans are more involved. But still, including the fans or including the opposing team would be kind of a cool 21st century spin on the Ryder Cup.
I think so, too. And I think that the Americans would probably welcome the opportunity to pick who goes to the European team, especially after how the last 20 years have gone. So I don't think that the PGA of America and the European Tour would agree to do it, but I would love to see how it played out.
We're gonna reserve breaking down and making picks for maybe when we get a little bit closer to actually keying off at the Ryder Cup. So we're gonna transition here quickly for a final few minutes to the FedEx Cup. And I know, people have their doubts about the FedEx Cup. Is it really good for golf? Is it really drumming up interest in this last quarter of the PGA Tour season? A couple things that interest me with this weekend's BMW Championship from Cherry Hills out in Denver is that I'm getting the sense hearing from players who have been on the course for the last few days preparing for the tournament that this course, that this altitude is going to lend itself more to almost something like an exhibition than it is actual tournament-style golf. I heard, I don't know if it was David Duval or somebody, I think it was David Duval who might be a member or plays most of his golf out of Cherry Hills. David Duval said something along the lines of the winning score is going to be in the mid-teens, and if the greens slow down slightly, it'll be in the 20s. And what's your thought about having this BMW Championship played at the high altitudes of Cherry Hills in Denver?
I think it would be pretty fun. I mean, we haven't had a PGA Tour event in the Denver area since the FedEx Cup started. started as a concept because the International went away as soon as the FedEx Cup came into existence in 07. So I think it would be pretty fun to see altitude golf. I think it would be pretty fun to see it on Cherry Hills, which hosted the U.S. Amateur a couple of years ago, which had the U.S. Women's Open in 05 and was a very difficult test for them, or for that field, I should say. And I do think it's going to get its butt handed to it by this field of 70 players. And I agree with Duval. I mean, I would look at like 12 to 15 under as the winning score if things kind of stay good weather-wise, and if they go bad and soften the course, then yeah, 20, 22 under par works. But that's happened in other FedEx Cup events, and I'm fine with that. I'm okay with one event out of the four where you got to make a lot of birdies, and one event out of the four where you've got to kind of hang on, which Ridgewood kind of was, especially in the back nine. And then a couple of events in between. So I think you get a nice kind of gamut with these four host courses this year. So I'm okay with that. I mean, I have no problem with birdies. I think people like birdies. I think you like birdies. So let's see birdies.
Birdies are fun. I'd like to make more of them. But what are your thoughts about hitting a three wood 370 yards as Rory McIlroy apparently did the other day?
I think that's just the nature of playing golf at altitude. I don't think there's a whole lot you can do about it. Short of going to play a joke course that's 8,000 yards long at altitude, and that doesn't exist. So I think Cherry Hills' defense primarily is a placement. It's where you put the ball off the tee. So that's the only defense it really has. I mean, the greens are pretty interesting. But that's the biggest defense is placement. You do it or you don't. And if you do, you score really well. And if you don't, then you can shoot an over par round. So it just all comes down to design. And I think Cherry Hills is a good design for where it is in terms of altitude. So I think it'll hold up okay. I hope it doesn't get demolished and embarrassed, but it's possible.
They should make the players go back to using all wooden-headed drivers or have them switch hands and hit opposite. Maybe righties play left, lefties play right.
But you know what? I would find it pretty interesting if we were coming up with a fantasy scenario where they took driver out of your hand and they made you play with 13 clubs instead of 14. Or you could have a 10th wedge or whatever. But I think it would be interesting if they took the driver out of your hand. But then again, they're going to kind of do that this week because placement will matter. And there'll be a lot of guys who will just take 3-wood and 3-iron and hybrid off the tee all week long, and they'll be just fine because they want to play for position. They don't care about distance.
I still like the idea in general of these guys are so good that anytime they make, let's say, double bogey or worse, they should be forced to take a club out of their bag for the rest of the round.
So
you score a double bogey or a worse in any event. I'm not just talking about the FedEx playoffs. In any event, you score a double bogey or worse, you then have to go through your bag and remove a club. That idea makes too much sense for me not to do.
I'd be all for it. I'm all for kind of gimmick events or gimmicks to events that make the monotony of every week on the PGA Tour a little bit different. I'm 100% behind that, but no one else is going to go for it that actually makes these decisions.
Yeah, well, as soon as we get some sponsors and raise the money, then we'll create the game in our vision, and we can start to make these changes. Okay, that's enough golf for now, but before I let you go, Ryan, I have to let you bask in the glory that is our Baltimore Orioles 2014 baseball season. Now, I don't really want to jinx us with a few weeks remaining in the regular season. It is still only September, about 3.5 weeks remaining. And how excited, though, are you? How comfortable are you with how well the Orioles are playing?
I'm very uncomfortable with it, but I'm really excited. Because it could blow up at any moment. And I don't think that they're going to melt down here in September. I think they'll win the division, and ultimately they'll be in the playoffs. They're 99.5% statistical chance to do it. So that's going to happen. But my fear is if they're the one seed, who the wild card team will be. And if it turns out to be the Oakland A's, then for some reason I'm frightened. If it doesn't turn out to be them, then I think they have a really good chance to get to the World Series. And then if they win, I can just quit being a baseball fan, because that all I want is one. All I want is one World Series in my lifetime, and I'd be willing to shut it down. So, totally juiced.
Yeah, I share your enthusiasm, and you know, I try to shy away from as much as possible, because every time a national baseball writer chimes in on the Orioles, they somehow come up with some sort of metric that makes me feel worse about the Orioles situation. I think it was Jonah Carey for Grantland the other day, who was ranking his, you know, top 30 teams in baseball, and the Orioles were fourth or fifth. But he said that was a byproduct of being the luckiest team in baseball, and that they have won so many games based primarily on luck, and that you really can't account for how they've won all these games. And so you read stuff like that, and you start to question how ready for the postseason your team is. And so I'm not skeptical. I'm not afraid to buy in, but when you haven't won in so long and you tasted the playoffs for the first time in 15 years, a couple of years ago, you just want to be careful with how enthusiastic you are, until you get there. But I don't see any reason, why the Baltimore Orioles, cannot make it to the World Series. Sure, the American League and certainly the teams out west, like the A's and Angels, can outpitch the Orioles, but I'd put our lineup up against any lineup in baseball.
I would too. I would put the staff is pitching this really last 2 months up against anybody. So I'm not afraid. I guess not afraid from a talent perspective. I think it's all there to pull it off. My fear is that we'll get Jeffrey Mariner somehow, and this will all come crashing down. And if that happens, I don't know if I can take that.
Ryan Belangi from GolfNewsNet.com. Thanks for coming on and talking about the Ryder Cup, and we'll catch up with you before the event takes off.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, John.